Welcome to the Men and Clerics podcast, your preaching / World Cup podcast, where we also make a playlist. I'm Zach Paris. I'm the pastor of Luther Campus Ministry at the University of Colorado. Boulder, shout out to Adam Burnt for the name of the podcast this week.
Well done, sir. What a reversal of the intro. Almost as much of a reversal as Argentina versus Saudi Arabia, or to a lesser extent, Australia versus France. You think it's going one way, and then boom. Quickly reversed.
I watched the US-Wales game with our friend Ewan, who said while we were watching the game, seems like mostly you talk on that podcast.
Yeah.
Thanks for the feedback, Ewan. Thanks for the feedback.
Yeah. Well Matt, we could do a little recap.
Sisters have been kissed all around. Ties that felt like losses, I think, for both of us, Matt. The U.S. tied Wales 1-1. Unfortunately, my fellow man bun wearer, Gareth Bale, scored a penalty kick there in the second half to equalize. After the U.S. looked really good and took a lead. And so we went from feeling good to feeling bad. I felt like it was Christmas morning, Matt, the night before. And I was like, man, it's Christmas morning tomorrow. What am I going to get? I'm either going to get rollerblades or I'm going to get kicked in the down belows. And I got, you know, I think I got kicked in the down belows by a pair of rollerblades.
I was curious because, you know, that game ended in a tie. So I was wondering, like if it was reversed, like if Wales scored in the first half, mm-hmm. and then the U.S. scored to tie it up in the second half, you'd feel much better. Yeah. Even though it's the same.
If you had told me before the game started we were going to get a draw, I'd be like, not a bad result.
Yeah.
Not a bad result. I'll take it.
Yeah.
It happened in the fashion that it happened, though, and it felt
right. Yeah.
Like my self-worth went down. I don't know.
Yeah. I hear you. So end in a draw. How you feeling about where it goes from here? We got to face England next.
You know, we beat England, all our problems are solved. And if Argentina can get defeated by Saudi Arabia, 2-1, Matt. Wild. Saudi Arabia is terrible. International football is a crazy game, Matt. They don't play together. These teams have practiced together for 1 week. Like, that's literally what happened. They've been together for a week, and now they're playing the most important games of their lives. So there really is a whole lot of, like, nothing can happen, which is what happened with Mexico today, which is typically the most likely outcome. Everybody's scared. They're very conservative. Also, who knows what's going to happen because they don't play together all the time.
Yeah. Anything can happen with England, although they did win their first game by a significant margin.
They did 6-2. They looked good, but here's where the English outfought themselves. You know, I think we all know that in any athletic competition, you just get a certain number of like points or runs or goals. And, you know, as Roger Bennett said on Men in Blazers recently, bold choice by the English to try to use their full allotment of goals in the first game. Because once you use them all, they're out. They're gone.
That's how it works, huh?
That's how it works, you know. I feel fine. You know, I mean, I think, you know, any result against England would be great. I've never been looking at the group planning on beating England. The main thing now, it's still the way we thought it was. We're competing against Wales, and we just need to perform better against Iran than Wales does against Iran, so long as England beats Wales as well. So, you know, a draw against England would be a win for us. It would be like the past two times we played England in a World Cup, where we've won both those games by a score of 1-1. We'd take another win like that, and that'd be gravy. And then we would just need to do the same result that Iran did. So
yeah.
We'll see.
So we're looking forward to that one on Friday.
Black Friday.
Wow. How's the schedule working out for you? It's for me, it's like, you know, you get these games done in the morning and you got the rest of the day. So it's a little bit, and sometimes you wake up to a surprising result from the game you didn't get up at 4 a.m. for.
The thing East Coasters don't appreciate, Matt, is the beauty of sports watching for West Coast folk like ourselves that games don't have to start late at night, right? Like, as a college football person, when I've lived in California or Colorado and a noon game starts at 9 o'clock, it is perfect, right? You don't have to like sit around waiting on the game. The game happens, you get it out of the way, and you've got the whole day ahead of you. Only issues I've had so far, because that's about where it's been, noon kickoff for the men's game, for the Wales game for me, is that then I felt really sad for the rest of the day. And so that wasn't great.
It's true.
That I had to face the rest of the day feeling pretty sad. It was not good.
Oh, wow. Wow. Commentary from my household. My daughter's watching their first World Cup that they're actually paying attention to. here's their take. I turned it on. They said, "Where are the girls? Are there any girls playing?" We said, no, that's another, it's a different World Cup. They said, "Oh, okay, so this is the boys World Cup." So that's apparently what we're calling this, the boys World Cup, which not fair. Wrong. It's fair.
Yeah.
It's fair. Also, this morning we were watching Mexico play Poland, and Poland, you know, playing pretty good defense. And Maya said, "Yeah, that happens to me a lot when I play too. Trying to get the ball in the goal, somebody blocks it, kicks it away." So she could relate. Was really relating to the players on the field. Very similar situation that they face on Saturday mornings. So it's good. They're getting to get a good first experience here.
Have the girls watched the football soccer movie on Netflix yet?
No, what's that?
Oh, have we not talked about this, Matt? It's incredible. There's a Netflix animated show, movie. It's a short movie. It's my daughter has watched it once because I made her. And then yesterday, she just watched it again for her own enjoyment. It features Zlatan Ibrahimovic, right? Former LA Galaxy player. It features Rob Stone, the... you know, commentator, host of the World Cup stuff for Fox. Megan Rapinoe is in it. And of course, it features Weird Al Yankovic. And Weird Al is he's Dr. Mayor Weird Al. So he's the mayor of the city and also a genetic scientist who is trying to find a way to steal the talent of all the world's best footballers. And a group of kids try to have to save the day as Dr. Mayor Weird Al attempts to become the greatest all-star of all all-stars of all time. It's really good and has Weird Al. So what? Megan Rapinoe. My daughter was disappointed because she wanted to know when the girls were going to play as well. And I was like, this summer, actually, the Women's World Cup's coming up this summer. And she's like, "Oh, will Megan play then?" And I was like, "Well, I don't think so. I think she's retired." And she was really devastated by that. So
yeah, it is really disappointing. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well,
that's fantastic. You get to introduce.
I think the U.S. Yeah. If you want to put your money down now, U.S. women not winning the World Cup this summer.
No. Well, they had a disappointing finish in the Olympics. So
yeah, England, Germany, the European teams, Spain, they've taken off. I don't know if we're going to keep up developmentally. I think there are big developmental questions to ask about women's soccer in the United States. NWSL, Angel City FC, love them, support them, Matt. But is it? It's not as good development league right now as the European Super League.
Ooh.
Women's Champions League. It's a better league.
Wow.
And we let them pass us on that. Failures. Wow. It's almost as if the organizations that govern international sports and national sports are corrupt and unable to successfully do things.
I have really been enjoying the NPR podcast, The Last Cup. About Messi's last cup, which is not just about Messi though. They've gone into like Argentine history and you know, global soccer history, all this fascinating stuff that you could do on a multi-episode podcast, which I only started listening to this week. I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but I just, you know, not following this at all, then all of a sudden this week all in, and then I'll be out again when it's done.
20,000 leagues into this thing.
You know? But good stuff. And one of the things that they said was that in the 70s and 80s, Argentina had like one of the best soccer leagues in the world.
Yeah.
But then all this money flowed into the European leagues. And so they soaked up all the Latin American players.
Yeah.
And now basically the Argentine league is like a feeder league for the European league, which is just, that's a really interesting shift. I wonder how that affects World Cups and all of this stuff.
Oh yeah, Matt, it's big. It's big. The, The other thing that's really interesting about Messi, because Messi isn't super Argentine, right?
Argentine. Right. Yeah, well, yeah.
You know, technically, he has a passport from Argentina, but really grew up in Barcelona in the academy there. And that's one of the interesting things that, I mean, that's tied up in, if you want to get into Qatar and the football side of Qatar's team, is this is a relatively new thing, like with globalization, that you have so many players who have options, right, for who they might represent, right? Like the U.S. team is beautiful in their, its diversity there. And as my friend Ewan reminded me throughout the game of there are two players in particular, Jedi Robinson and Yunus Musa, are born in England, right? Like, you know, they're born in England, or like Weston McKinney, born in Germany to American parents on a military base, right? So he had options where he was going to do there, right? Or if you're born like is it Haji or Yunus Musa, who are like born to, like, you have two parents who have two different nationalities. You're born in the U.S. though, so you've got that, like, so you've got like three kind of passports there. And then, right, like, you maybe move to go live in a fourth country and grow up there, and you've got options there as well. So, like,
yeah,
player mobility is a completely new kind of thing that's shaping things, and the player recruitment and the Ricardo Pepi stuff. But Messi was already he was so ahead of his time. He was already a globalized player.
Yeah, yeah.
Spain would have been even better if they had Messi back then.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I just got to that part of the podcast where he leaves when he's 13 because he goes to play for this Barcelona Youth League. But he wants to play for Argentina's national team. And apparently once you put that jersey on, you're stuck.
The thing I was struck by, because I believe one of the elements in the Messi story, right, because there's been this long, Argentina has not won, you know, an international tournament since 86.
Yeah. The hand of God.
The hand of God in Mexico City against our beloved insane English friends. There was always this debate about how Argentine is he, right? And like, when they haven't performed well, it's been because Messi isn't really like, he doesn't love the shirt, you know?
It's so harsh.
Right? It is so harsh. And there's this back and forth, right? Because like, world-class footballers aren't necessarily like the most like cerebral of people, you know? And like, as we're seeing currently with Cristiano Ronaldo, like Messi is Messi's not like, he's been convicted of some pretty serious tax evasion crimes. He wasn't mouthing the words to the national anthem for a while. And now he's back to singing the national anthem, right? Which is a very silly thing. It feels very silly. Let me say that first, right? It feels like a very silly thing for people to get upset about, right?
Yeah.
And I just, like, and maybe here's a connection point for us as men and clerics, is mumbling along to songs. I've watched the U.S. team mumble along to the songs in thinking about, right, mumbling along to the Star Spangled Banner and just wondering, right, like how, like, they probably had to teach some of these guys the songs, right, because they didn't, like, necessarily grow up in U.S. schools and stuff, right? And, like, I was thinking, well, who cares? But then the Iran game was earlier in the day where it was, like, a big deal, a big political statement that they did not mouth the words to the song.
Yeah.
So just an interesting dynamic to lift up, I think, about how insignificant that ritual action can be. Mm-hmm. And as a person who spent some time in adolescence, young adulthood, as a at best mumbling along to the songs at Christmas Eve, you know, like, we've got song mumblers and non-mumblers in your worship spaces. And so maybe that means something, maybe it doesn't. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Our music director at St. Mark's thinks that we should change the U.S. national anthem to Lift Every Voice and Sing.
Well, he's which, correct.
is correct. And then it just made me imagine that at the World Cup. And I'm like, that would actually be much more.
We'd be much fantastic. More ready to play. Maybe that was the issue. We would have had a quicker goal if we hadn't sung such a downer of an anthem. Yeah. Oh, can we sing Old Canada and just change some words? That's
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Well,
we talk about the important stuff here on the podcast.
We talk about the important stuff. Well, this has been your 15 minutes of extra time. Hey. Talking about the World
Kairos Cup. And Kronos. A little Kairos time for you.
What are we moving to? Is this Advent 2?
Extra Time is already a soccer podcast. Yeah, just we don't want to get sued.
Okay.
Advent 2, Matt, which is the best week of Advent.
Advent 2, this is the best week?
The best week of Advent.
Interesting. Let's see what it is.
Because it's the most Aryan of any of them.
Oh, nice. Very nice. I'm glad you had that at the ready. It's very
in good. Those days, John the Baptist appeared in the wilderness of Judea, proclaiming, "Repent, for the kingdom of heaven is come near." This is the one of whom the prophet Isaiah spoke when he said, "The voice of one crying out in the wilderness, prepare the way of the Lord, make his paths straight." Now John, we're clothing camels here, with a leather belt around his waist, and his food was locusts and wild honey. And the people of Jerusalem and all Judea were going out to him and all the region along the Jordan. And they were baptized by him in the river Jordan, confessing their sins. But when he saw the Pharisees and the Sadducees coming for baptism, he said to them, "You brood of vipers, who warned you to flee from the wrath to come? Bear fruit worthy of repentance. Do not presume to say to yourself, 'We have Abraham as our ancestor,' for I tell you, God is able from these stones to raise up children to Abraham. Even now the axe is lying at the root of the trees. Every tree, therefore, that does not bear good fruit is cut down and then thrown into the fire. I baptize you with water for repentance, but one who is more powerful than I is coming after me, and I am not worthy to carry his sandals. He will baptize you with the Holy Spirit and, most importantly, fire. His winnowing fork is in his hand. He will clear his threshing floor and will gather his wheat into the granary. But the chaff, Matt, is going to burn that with unquenchable fire."
Woo! Sounds like the end of the world.
"And I feel fine." The appropriate liturgical response.
Wow. I bought an axe this year. Not a real axe, more of a hatchet. But I got a prop. I could use it. It seems a little dangerous, but I could.
Do you look down on other preachers who are prop preachers? Like comedians look down on prop comedians. R.I.P. Gallagher.
Yeah, in honor of Gallagher, what I'm going to do this Sunday. I mean, this chaff. I mean, that's like one image that you could use. But what if you used a watermelon? What if you used like a melon, and you were like, "That's really what's happening here." Just take a sledgehammer. Nobody sits in the front row anyway, so it should be fine.
There's a really funny snippet from like an upcoming Netflix special where it's like featuring Bo Burnham, but it's got a bunch of old comedians, and they're kind of like talking to him, and he goes to play something on the piano, and Ray Romano goes, "Oh, he's a prop comic." That's funny. Yeah, watermelon. You got to use that watermelon for your children's sermon this week.
Do it. Yeah. What do we have anything new to say about this text?
I mean, you might could go back and listen to the like three previous podcasts we've recorded on this text. You know, I think it's really exciting. You can say a lot of things with it. Things. What do you got back? I know I draw something out here, but I just drew a pretty hard blank there.
Yeah, like it's so funny. The further I get into this career, the less I like the lectionary texts. Because here's a time of year when you could tell this story, and instead of telling the Christmas story, like, you know, there's a lot of like lead up to it. There's a lot of prologue in both Matthew and Luke, which we don't get to use because we're too busy doing apocalyptic texts, because we have to tell people, "Hey, it's not all cute stuff. We got to make sure they understand it's the end of the world." I think the Revised Common Lectionary folks were overthinking it, like way overthinking it, and were assuming.
You're saying church people overthinking it?
I think assuming a very different religious context than we have in 2022. So it is time, by far time, for a new
consultation on common text in the 1980s. Had a different cultural context and difficult to imagine.
Right?
Like
and yeah, we're still stuck with these texts. Give me a break. Anyway, here's what I would do though. Here's what I've done in the past, and what I would do again. One thing that has worked for me. So last week we talked about the thief in the night and what Do you want God to take away from you? This is another opportunity, I think, to follow that theme as we're preparing for a new year. Sometimes we do prayer stations in Advent, and one thing that I do on this Sunday is I'll have a little fire pit going outside in the courtyard, and I'll invite people to write on a piece of paper. I mean, you could think about this as confession and forgiveness, but you could also think about it as like, what are some things that I want to leave behind? What is some chaff that I want to be burned and just leave it in 2022 and move into 2023 refreshed, forgiven, and fed and made new, and drop it into the fire and let that little slip of paper burn. I think it's one way to like bring out what this text is about, which, you know, he's gonna burn the chaff. Doesn't mean he's gonna burn like individuals, but you're burning those parts of yourself that God is gonna get rid of. That's my suggestion for you.
You know, I continue to stick by the first sermon I ever wrote on this, which is my REM sermon. And I don't know if it's still the best sermon ever, but I think it's probably my favorite sermon I've ever written, where I talked about, do you recall it, Matt? If you don't recall it, then our listeners don't
recall it. I do not recall your sermon. No.
My REM sermon? But this was, they played It's the End of the World as We Know It at the end of camp dances when I was in middle school, at the summer camp I went to, and I was not a dancer. But that at the end of the dance, it was the last song they played, and everybody just started like running in a circle around the gym. And that, like, the force of that activity, like, peeled me off of the walls of the, from my wallflower status into this like circle of running people. And right, like, it, like, dancing as a middle schooler and being like active at a dance was the end of the world, you know, for me. As I'm,
yeah.
And yet, right. Perhaps never felt more alive. And so it's like you said, right? But just tying into that reality that having everything, tearing everything down can be good news, is good news, right? Like, there's real freedom and liberation in the tearing things down.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that resonates at a time when people are, I mean, you can talk about that on individual levels. You can also talk about it in terms of systems and structures. At a time when people are frustrated with the way things are, that this also applies to the world at large, to our systems and structures, the dismantling that needs to happen. So, yeah.
The interesting way the sermon goes is that I start by reciting all the words and people don't know what I'm doing.
Good. That's so great. There's another, yeah, just run with the REM lyrics. Yeah.
Lenny Bruce is not afraid.
You could act that out, Zach. You could be an, you know, there's prop preachers. You could also just, you could start dancing, pull people into it. That'd be great.
Sounds good. Gosh. That was my favorite thing ever. My favorite church service I ever went to was at St. Paul and the Redeemer, the Episcopal Church in Hyde Park. Last year, a seminary and Advent, they did like a chanted version of, It's the End of the World as We Know It, and the choir processed in, and they were chanting it, and that was, I still have it in a file. Like, I had the bulletin from that, because
yeah.
I still dream of the day that I'm in a place where that happens again.
Fantastic. Wow.
Oh, so good. So good. I mean, yeah, that's the most interesting way to, I mean, that's what I've got, I think.
Mm-hmm.
This gives us some good news, at least.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good. You know, it's a good text because we see it every year. I mean, I know it's got like some imagery in it. Here's my metaphor for the Revised Common Lectionary. It feels like when you go to see your favorite band, or you go to see a band where they're like too embarrassed about their hits. They don't want to play the hits. They just want to play all the deep cuts. You know, instead of actually playing the hits. And that's what I feel like more and more about the lectionary, where I'm like, okay, we have this treasure trove of stories, but instead of playing the hits, we just do all these deep cuts. Meanwhile, we have a generation that doesn't even know the hits. They don't know the hits, and they're not going to go to like five other classes during the week to learn them at church. Come on, bring back the hits. We need a new Revised Common Lectionary.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's the whole like, I'm doubling down on the take I had last week, right? That like you know, and I've been at the place of like of an Advent snob hipster, you know, like I've been there. Like I've got the source book. I can read you I can almost recite from memory the thing about how people of old would take their wheels off their wagons and turn them into their Advent wreath because it forced them to slow down and like it's beautiful stuff. It is.
Yeah.
It is beautiful stuff. And yet, this is like one time a year where people show up at church and with energy and because they want to. Like, I don't think we're privileged enough in a privileged enough position here in the 2020s to be like, no, no, no. We will only get to do the things you want when nobody else is here. Right. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Let's just like, you got to be a little more, like, we just got to go with who we got and what we got, you know, not who we were.
Wow. Do we want to talk about Isaiah? Or?
Sure. It's a classic.
It's a classic. Isaiah 11, 1 to 10. A shoot shall come from the stump of Jesse, and a branch shall grow out of his roots. The spirit of the Lord shall rest on him, the spirit of wisdom and understanding, the spirit of counsel and might, the spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord, the spirit of joy. And you're probably, if you've done a lot of baptisms, you know this part by heart. His delight shall be in the fear of the Lord. He shall not judge by what his eyes see or decide by what his ears hear, but with righteousness he shall judge the poor and decide with equity for the meek of the earth. He shall strike the earth with the rod of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips he shall kill the wicked. Whew. Righteousness shall be the belt around his waist, and faithfulness the belt around his loins. The wolf shall live with the lamb, the leopard shall lie down with the kid, the calf and the lion and the fatling together, and a little child shall lead them. The cow and the bear shall graze, their young shall lie down together, and the lion shall eat straw like the ox. The nursing child shall play over the hole of the asp, and the weaned child shall put its hand on the adder's den. Ooh. They will not hurt or destroy on all my holy mountain. For the earth will be full of the knowledge of the Lord, as the waters cover the sea. On that day, the root of Jesse shall stand as a signal to the peoples. The nations shall inquire of him, and his dwelling shall be glorious. Word of God, word of life.
Thanks be to God. Great imagery. Like I said last week, that that is a good thing about the lectionary here is that it gives you a lot of work with, like a pool of images and ideas to work with out of the Old Testament, which is what I prefer.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, where Matthew gives you, to oversimplify it, some negative imagery, some dismantling imagery, Isaiah gives you a little bit of balance, gives you a way to do some imagining, to cast something positive. Not that you always need to have be uber positive in church, but if you want a little bit of balance from that, those challenging words in Matthew, Isaiah gives you something to work with. Get some good in your good news.
What caught me, what I'm interested in, Matt, if I was going to go listen to a sermon based on Isaiah 11 here, is he shall not judge by what his eyes see, nor by what his ears hear, but with righteousness he shall judge the poor. I'm interested in what that means. I think there could be something there. Right. Especially the eyes see thing would be hard. I think it's worth unpacking, right? Like nothing's truer than the things we see with our own eyes. You know, the ear part, I could be like, oh, he's going to disregard gossip and what people are saying, right? But to disregard what his eyes see. I think it's surprising to me. And then what does righteousness look like? What's this alternative? What's this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The righteousness of God, the righteousness of the people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good stuff. Good imagery to work with. What are we listening to?
The imagery works not only, Matt, with writing sermons, but also with making a playlist, which I'm going to do this week for you, Matt. I'm really going out of my way here. Not preaching this week, but I'll do it. I'm preaching next week, so I get two Advent Sundays to preach on this year, which is unusual for a traveling preacher like myself. It's not exactly right, Matt, but it's such a good song about roots that I'm going, no roots. I got no roots. My Home Is Never on the Ground by Alice Merton, who, I don't know if you know this, sister of Thomas Merton, I'm just kidding. I don't think
really?
She is. No.
Really?
No. But what the song is about is that she is, she's actually Canadian German, German Canadian. And it is about her like global identity and that there is no place where she is at home because she's a German in Canada and she's a Canadian in Germany. And I think there's something to that this time of Advent. Maybe that'd be good for Lionel Messi to listen to as well. He struggles with his global identity and struggles to pay his enormous tax debt. Finally, and by finally, I mean second, but not last, Bandsplain has been doing Big Star. And if you like lengthy podcasts, the Bandsplain episodes now are like 4 hours. They're so long. And I enjoy, like, a background put them on because I can't pay attention for 4 hours. But they do play, like, full length. They do the full cuts when they play the songs. And I'd never really listened to Big Star much before. I'd always heard about them because, you know, in all the R.E.M. books and literature, they're a big influence on Michael Stipe and the band. So you get some Big Star. And 13, I think, you know, it's been covered a million times. I think I hear 13 playing the background of Matthew 3 here. An offer to love that is unrequited. I think that's a thread that's in there. And last, I switched it up, Matt, because we talked about tearing everything down, burning everything down. And I got to go with our friend, former guest on the pod, Eve Barsley of Clem Snide's song that has become, that I think is my favorite, actually, off of that album, Stuff of Us. Just a haunting repeated chorus of, what if we just let all the deadwood burn down? Oh, so good.
It is really good.
Could we open that smoke-filled eyes just a little more deep and wide? Oh, heaven spread all around us, love. Maybe too close to see. And the stuff of us that's most real is eternal and free. It's a beautiful song, haunting, and excellent to listen to this week.
So good. It would be cool if you could get him to play your backyard.
Oh man, do you think he would?
Oh wow. Let's see. I'm just playing the hits. I did my go-to Fire songs. Bruce Springsteen, classic song, Fire. Really, really good. Springsteen though in hot water over his ticket prices. Now he is defending them. He's defending it's bad. It's really
champion
bad.
Champion of the working man.
He's like, oh no, they're affordable. No, they're not. That's ridiculous. Yeah, we'll see if I can ever afford to go to a Springsteen show again. And then U2 with Fire. It was one of their record store day drops. No record store, no Black Friday record store day drop for U2 this year. Disappointing. But Fire, good song from the October era. And then finally, Bomba Estéreo with Fuego. Manténlo prendido, fuego. No, no, dejes acallar. Oh my gosh, apagar. No, no, dejes apagar.
You didn't go with Woodstock 99 closer, Light My Fire?
I did not. I did not.
You know, I think, Matt, both of us can get pretty romantic about images of tearing everything down. Though, Woodstock 99, good reminder, not always a great thing.
You can use that as your sermon illustration, Woodstock 99.
If you were preaching to a church full of Gen Xers, Woodstock 99 is the place for you to go.
I had a line in my sermon last week where I said, in the first draft of my sermon, where I said, Semi-Sonic was right. Every new beginning comes from some other beginning's end. And then I realized that literally nobody listening to me, except for probably Chris, would understand the reference. Mm-hmm. And so I cut that.
You cut it.
In the final draft.
Isn't that the worst when you cut the thing that you really like that makes...
It's like... Well,
I'd be such a better preacher, Matt, if my audience were more consistently like
like you,
geriatric.
That's how it would work for me.
If they were like me, it'd be great. They'd love it. Oh,
well, it's been real.
Final.